Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Happy New Year. I have a old friend and colleague making his debut on Nightlight Part 2, but we're working on a follow-up show already. We have had a few more ghost-themed shows recently, and we are kicking off the new year with another. Willie Hassel is a longtime paranormal researcher in the New England area, has been a stalwart co-host of Spirit Radio with the lovely and multi-talented Lynn Nickerson. And Willie has just released a solo documentary film entitled The Soul of the Sea Witch. It is now available on YouTube. You can just go to YouTube, type in The Soul of the Sea Witch, and it should pop up. It's like a little photo of President Eisenhower. Hi, Willie. How are you? Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year, Mark. And Barbara, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, we're doing fine. You took on the role of being Stanley Kubrick for this project. You're the narrator, producer, director, audio engineer, camera operator, just doing a little bit of everything on it. Is it a daunting task to be a jack of all trades on doing a, 35-minute documentary?
Yeah, it is. It's a big project, and yeah, that's a lot of hats to wear. But it was a fun project. I had a great time every minute of it.
You did a great job, and it just wait till the show's over, then head over to YouTube. It's a very well done movie. I really enjoyed it. And
thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think when you get into ghosts, paranormal shows or stories, most of the time they're dealing with haunted houses, but ships seem to be an overlooked connection to the paranormal.
You can look at Moby Dick, and you know, you get that scene with St. Elmo's fire, and it adds the gothic element when Captain Ahab and Starbuck and some of the other crew members, you know, touch their swords together, and it gives you a really it's a really eerie scene. You get the Flying Dutchman legend, and the Bermuda Triangle deals with lost ships and airplanes, the Philadelphia Experiment, the ship in Samuel Taylor Coleridge's The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. We have a number of literary haunted, ghostly apparition type settings on ships.
Let's not forget one of the more famous ones, of course, the Queen Mary.
In San Diego.
Long Beach, California.
Okay, and that one is a major paranormal destination now. What, that seems to be featured pretty frequently on a lot of the ghost shows. I know it's not in your movie, but what's the story behind the hauntings in the Queen Mary?
You know, I don't really know the story to the Queen Mary. I've never been there. I've been by it. I've seen it, but I've never actually been there. And I should probably put it on my list for one of those places to visit one of these days. I really don't know the story behind it.
Yeah, we need a field trip. But don't know why it's haunted, but that's a West Coast example of a haunted destination. But your documentary is featuring an East Coast ship. So
yes, it is.
It's the it's the USS Salem. It was commissioned in 1943. So take us through these early stages of the building of the USS Salem.
Well, actually, the ship was ordered on June 14th, 1943. It was what was originally planned to be 12 ships were ordered by the U.S. Navy. Only three of them were ever actually finished, though, due to the end of the war. The USS Des Moines, the USS Newport News, and the USS Salem. So, as I said, she was ordered on June 4th, 1943, and then the keel was laid down in July of 1945. But she didn't sail until March 25th of 1947, after the war had ended. And she was commissioned officially on January 30th of 1949. And she then did her shakedown cruising in October of 1949 in the Caribbean, made several trips down to Cuba, where she got the nickname the Gitmo Express. She later joined the Atlantic Fleet at the turn of the decade, 1950, and was then known as the Pride of the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean Sea, where she did most of her career. It was a pretty short career, though, only 10 years. It was January 1930 when the ship was decommissioned and sent down to the Mothball Fleet at the Philadelphia Navy Shipyard. A pretty short span for such an expensive and capable warship.
Yeah, and in your movie, you do talk about the dimensions of the ship. It's actually probably much larger than many people would think. Can you give us the dimensions and the amount of crew members it held?
Sure. It was 717 feet long with a beam of 77 feet. It had a crew of 1,800 officers and enlisted men. And it was she was a very well armed ship. She was built for war, although she never did see action. She carried 9 8-inch 55 caliber main guns in 3 triple gun turrets, 2 over the forecastle and 1 aft of the superstructure. She also had 12 5-inch 38 calibers, 20 3-inch guns, and 8 20-millimeter anti-aircraft guns. And so, I mean, it was a well-armed ship. She was, no question about it, she was built for war.
Okay. You also note that the technology that was used in installed was in the late 1940s, it was actually the cutting edge in technology.
Oh yeah, she was state of the art for her time. But after 10 years, they had come up with bigger and better things, and of course we were coming into the nuclear age then. And so she had just kind of served her purpose, and they decided that was that was enough.
Okay.
Like I say, she was sent to the Philadelphia Navy yard, what's known as the Mothball Fleet, which essentially means that she sat there rusting away until 1994, the USS Salem Association in Quincy, Mass. Got the ship, and it was brought back to Quincy. And she sits now not more than 100 yards away from where she was built. The old Four River Shipyard in Quincy, Massachusetts, where a lot of Navy ships were built. I think actually more Navy ships were built there than any other shipyard in the country. And so now she is right back there. It's no longer the shipyard, but she is right back there, not more than 100 yards from where she was built back in 1949.
Okay, and just for the listeners to know that the USS Salem is now a museum. It's at the it's actually part of a
it's part of the United States Naval Shipbuilding Museum.
That was the name I was trying to think of.
And the ship is open to the public, not right now. It's closed during the winter. But during the spring, summer, and fall, the ship is open to the public to go, and anybody can go aboard and explore. And they also do paranormal investigations, public investigations aboard the ship, too.
Okay, so Willie gave us a great background on the ship. So some of its first couple voyages were to Cuba. The museum's staff, in your documentary, do you discuss the trip to the Eastern Mediterranean and its role there. That really starts to become an interesting story. So after, you know, the couple trips to Cuba, take us to the Mediterranean.
Yeah, like I said, she was the pride of the Sixth Fleet in the Mediterranean, and she did a lot of humanitarian type of missions, and she was also used in the Suez crisis in November 1956, and she responded to the Lebanon crisis in July 1958. But one of the other things that she responded to is one of the big reasons why the ship is haunted, and that is in 1953, she responded along with several ships from other countries to the Ionian Islands of Greece as aid to earthquake victims. They had a major earthquake, and several ships responded, and the Salem was used as sort of a makeshift hospital and, unfortunately, a makeshift morgue. For a lot of the victims of the earthquakes. And so now, the spirits, the hauntings aboard the ship are not just naval personnel. There's a lot of civilians, a number of women. During the earthquake, a number of babies were born aboard the ship. And there was a ghost dog on board the ship, which we assume must have come from the earthquake victims. She was also at one time, I forget what year this was, she was raptured alongside of the USS Cleveland at the Brooklyn Navy Yard when the Cleveland had an explosion and a fire aboard, and several men were killed and injured, and they were taken aboard the Salem, where the injured were taken aboard, where some of them died on the Salem. So we're sure that has something to do with why the ship is haunted. And another incident was in 1956. The Salem was headed to France, and she was out at sea doing some maneuvers along with the John J. Pierce. They were doing big gun practice when one of the guns on the Pierce jammed and exploded, and one sailor was killed instantly. Nine others were injured, and the injured were brought aboard the Salem, and where three of them died. And a little side note, one of the injured was an officer named John Pierce, who the ship was named after his uncle, the John J. Pierce. So there was for a ship that never saw action, there was a lot of deaths aboard or associated with it. The last I heard, there was over 90 deaths aboard the ship. And that is a lot of death for a ship that never saw combat.
Well, okay. So with the Greek earthquake, are people reporting that the apparitions were wearing Greek attire, clothes?
You would think so, and you would think that they'd be speaking Greek, but I've never actually heard that they were. Like I say, there was a number of women and children and the dog, but you would think that they would be seen wearing wearing Greek attire and maybe Greek sailors, I would think, and speaking Greek, but it's never been mentioned. It's one of those strange things about the paranormal and EVPs. You know, it seems like no matter what country you're in, why are the EVPs in English? It really doesn't make sense.
When Tanya and Joey Mendia were guests with us, I think it was the first time. They did talk about this German submarine that as captain or of a German submarine. Somehow his photo ended up in this museum in Beaufort, North Carolina. And I think that there was, when they were investigating the room where this photo of the submarine, photographed off the coast of North Carolina, was hung on the wall. They picked up some German words were being said. It's very interesting. I just get a couple samples of foreign languages being said, and there aren't Greek words being picked up by EVPs.
I have not heard any, no. The only EVPs that I've actually heard were in English. So, I mean, of course, like I said, it wasn't only the victims from the Greek island that are on board. Is, there are sailors, and, sailors who died from those other incidents who would of course be speaking in English.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, outside of the earthquake victims, there have been a number of sightings of sailors. There is one at the CPO mess. There is a sailor who was quite often seen. He'll walk by the corridor past the doorway to the CPO mess, and every time he'll walk by, it's always forward to aft. He never goes the other way, and they say that on occasion he's actually been spotted several times within just a few minutes. He'll walk by, you can yell at him, whatever, he won't respond, he won't look, he just walks by. So he's definitely a residual type haunting. But a number of people have seen that one and other full-bodied apparitions of sailors walking around the corridors of the ship.
Okay, the ghost dog is interesting. I don't think we've really covered ghost pets, from maybe more than a sentence or two. Okay, so the ghost dog probably came from the earthquake.
That's what we're assuming.
Okay, are ghost pets rarely reported, or do they show up fairly frequently in what people were writing or telling researchers like yourself?
You don't really hear all that much about spirits of animals, but I know they do exist. I mean, after all, an animal or a person has a, they can be ghost animals just as well. I actually had one myself in my apartment one time. I had a ghost cat. So I know it is possible, but no, you don't really hear all that much about them. I don't know why. It's a subject. Actually, there are books on pet hauntings. We were going to have a guest on our show one time talking about spirit animals, but it never, we couldn't get hooked up, so we never did. But it's an interesting part of the paranormal, I think.
Yeah, we haven't heard much about it, but now that you bring it up, I'm just wondering, is it reported more frequently, or just in a rare occasion? I just wanted to ask. I don't really know, but obviously. People died aboard the ship, and you said it also served as a morgue. There were also babies born there as well. I was just wondering. Is there any connection between the circumstances where someone is born, and if it's like during a catastrophic event, and the afterlife? One of the people in your documentary talked about a screaming that sound like it might have been one of the earthquake evacuees having a baby.
Mm-hmm. Sam Beltrusis, when he was aboard the ship one time, he heard this terrible screaming, and that's what he believes. It was one of the women from the earthquake. Probably giving birth down in the medical area. That's what he believes it was. So I mean, I suppose these women, they were pregnant, and time is getting near, and then with the with the earthquake and all the drama from the earthquake, it probably caused some of them to give birth a little earlier, maybe than they might have otherwise, and it just kind of happened that they gave birth aboard the ship.
Okay, well, you just have all kinds of even though the ship never was in a battle, the purpose, what became the purpose for providing humanitarian aid, really seemed like it opened the ship up for hauntings. It's dealing with all kinds of situations, unusual circumstances.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it did open the ship up for a lot of other types of circumstances other than just the military. They would give it more of a wide variety of possible hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah.
I think you as well as the museum staff and the few paranormal researchers that you include just provided a wide variety of hauntings. I just found the whole your 35 minutes, it'd be really captivating And obviously, you know, there has to be a, you know, the morgue. What about hauntings on the deck, or, you know, the crow's nests? Is there certain areas of the ship that are more prone for sightings than others? Or has there been some kind of study on location?
Yeah, most of the activity does seem to be down below deck.
Okay.
Like I said, the CPO mess and what is known as the third mess, which is one of the crew's mess halls, there's a lot of activity, and the wardroom, and let's see, the medical area, the surgical ward, and the dentist office. They seem to be the places where most of the activity takes place. I really haven't heard about much up in the bridge or the captain's quarters or anything like that. One thing that you do hear a lot, and this I heard myself more than once, is footsteps running up on the deck at night. And there was one incident in particular. One night I was aboard doing some filming, and they were also leading public ghost investigation that same night. Greater Boston Paranormal Associates is the group that does the investigations, and so they were down in the CPO mess, and I was wandering around the ship. So at one point I went and I joined them in there for a few minutes to see what was going on, and then we all heard loud footsteps running up on the deck. And in the first place, we knew there was nobody else up there. And outside of that, if you've ever been on the deck of the Salem at night in the dark and you tried to run up there, you would kill yourself. There's just too many things to run into, trip over. And I've done it myself a number of times, tripped. So we all heard this, and I said, well, I'm going to go up, you know, take a look and see if I see anybody, even though we know there's nobody there. And I got about maybe 30 feet down the corridor, and I ran into another group of investigators, and they said, did you hear the footsteps? And I said, yeah, I just heard them up on deck. I was just going up to take a look. And they said, well, we heard them, but it wasn't on the deck. We just heard them come running out from where you just came from. So it's strange. Two different groups of people heard the same thing, but coming from a different place.
Hmm. Okay. And the butter room, or what's called the butter room, it seems to be the most concentrated area of hauntings. But that seems to be understandable. It's what where a lot of the it's basically a makeshift morgue. But some of the other people in your video, you know, talk about it, like what you just mentioned, the footsteps in the hallway or going up the steps. One of the intriguing aspects of in these paranormal studies is why are some of the, you know, those narrow, steep flights of steps haunted? Why is someone reliving doing the same task over and over on like a stairwell or a certain hallway when, you know, they may not have died there I think that's one of my interests in, you know, my just kind of general paranormal studies. You know,
yeah.
Well, why is something at a certain location?
Well, that would be what's known as a residual haunting, which is just kind of an impression on the environment. It's something that you get them a lot, like maybe in an old house where at a certain time of day you'll see a spirit will maybe walk through a wall or something.
Right.
And, you know, it's residual. They won't react with anybody. It's an imprint on time. And why are they walking through a wall? Well, maybe because 100 years ago there was a door there. And so it's not like, I don't know, the way I would figure it, it's not like a spirit is actually stuck there. It's just, it's kind of like a movie being played over and over again. It is a kind of a hard concept to really wrap yourself around. I agree with that.
Yeah, it's just the particular location. Like, why this one particular location? Mm. My interest.
Yeah, well,
just trying to explain that.
Yeah, like the sailor that they see walk past the CPO mess. It's probably something that he just did many times during his time on the ship. Maybe he walked by there. He was on his way to dinner or something, which was kind of a happy time for him. You know, I mean, who knows? Mm-hmm. It could be something as simple as that. But I mean, the sailors that lived and worked aboard the ship. I mean, you know, most of them or many of them, anyways. They, you know, there was their home for a lot of the time for several years, and a lot of them, they loved the ship. And so when they, even if they didn't pass on the ship, I mean, if they may have passed years later somewhere else and just gone back because that's where they were happy. And maybe that's where they want to spend their time, you know?
Okay. Aside from, the numerous, people from the Greek earthquake who passed away on the ship. There are several naval officer ghosts. You know, like you just mentioned, that was their home for a long time. It was what.
Right.
1,800 people.
1,800, you know,
yeah. And you know, there's a few samples of an angry sailor and a cook. But what were some of the reports that you received about these ghostly characters?
Well, one of them, as you just mentioned, was the angry cook. The leader of Greater Boston Paranormal, his name is Don DeCristofaro, and I have to thank him. Without him, this video never would have happened. But anyways, he was on the ship one time years ago. It was his very first paranormal investigation, actually, and he had heard about this sailor back in the CPO mess. There was back in the third mess, actually. There was kind of a grumpy guy, and so he called him out one night, and he says, "You know, you think you're Mr. Tough Guy? Well, I was in the Navy too, and I'm tougher than you'll ever be." And you know, so anyway. He was, you know, not very nice to him. But and then nothing happened that night. Nothing at all happened. And it was several years later when he was investigating another time, and he had a psychic with him, and the grumpy cook showed up again, and you know, the psychic said he's right behind you. He's standing right behind you, and you know, he's basically laughing at us. You know, what are these people doing? Except for you, Don. She says he hates you. And at the time when she said this, well, first you got to understand this happened in the summertime. And aboard the ship in the summertime is incredibly hot. It's like it's a big steel can out in the sun. There's no air conditioning or anything. It's you know, if it's 90 degrees outside, it's probably 110 down below. And he says all of a sudden his back just felt like ice cubes. And that's when she said that he is right behind you and he hates you. And so what they've come to the conclusion, probably, why is the cook so grumpy? They think it's probably because all these people now are coming aboard the ship and, you know, they're just wandering around. You know, during the day, people come, they just tour the ship, wander around. At night, the paranormal investigators come and they sit around and they ask questions. And he's probably thinking, well, why are all these people just hanging around doing nothing? Well, I'm working. I'm on this ship busting my ass, and everybody else is just hanging around doing nothing. You know, so they think that's probably why he's kind of Mr. Grumpy.
Has anyone been able to identify who the cook was?
I don't think they have gotten a name for him yet. I know they have come up with names for some of the spirits aboard. I couldn't tell you offhand who they are. Don has done a lot of research into the ship, the history of the ship, and you know, he has put a lot of this stuff together. But I really couldn't tell you myself who they do have names for or not.
Okay. I just wondering. There was one ghost sighting that was really intriguing. Two people saw. A ghost enter the room they were in at the same time, but each one had a different perception of the ghost. Can you tell us about that? I thought that was like a shape-shifting type apparition. I found that one to be something really unique.
Yeah, well, it's basically just that they both perceived it in different ways. There was, again, Don DeCristofaro and Amanda Cook who saw this apparition, and they were in the... in the wardroom one night, and they were sitting there doing EVP sessions. They'd been there for about a half hour, I guess, and not really too much of anything was happening. And then they heard footsteps coming towards them, coming down the corridor. And so they were kind of waiting for somebody to come into the room. And what Amanda saw was she saw a full-bodied apparition. I mean, a solid person walked by the doorway. She didn't say, or at least I don't think she said, if it was somebody dressed in sailor's clothing or if civilian. I don't believe she said. But she saw this full-body, solid figure walk by the doorway. And Don, who was sitting right next to her, what he saw was a shadow figure. And the shadow figure actually stopped and stepped inside the doorway for a minute. And then turned around and left. And they both just kind of looked at each other and, did you see that? And what they did was they both went off after this person to see who it was, and one went out one door, one went out the other door on the other side of the ship, and they headed towards the bow. And of course, being a ship, it comes to a point in the bow, and they met up there, and neither of them saw anything, and he just disappeared. The only place he could have gone would to be up one of the stairways, but they are very loud. There's no way anybody could have gone up without them hearing it. And so who it was, they don't know. But it's like people perceive things differently. Like, I mean, some people actually do see spirits, see ghosts. Other people, like myself, never see anything. So it's all in, I guess, all in how much in tune you are to it and the way each individual person would perceive it.
Case study, it's just something really, I don't know the right word for it. The point you made about perception of the viewer.
Mm.
Should be some kind of lesson for us. You know, kind of seems like, you know, like the Rakshasa Kolshak. You perceive the person you trust, but it's actually a monster that you're projecting your trust onto. It just seemed like something really different in what's been reported. I just found it very interesting. But the ship was named the Salem, and you know, the your movie is entitled The Soul of the Sea Witch. But does the connection to Salem, the, you know, some kind of connotation with, you know, the some of the aspects of an unpleasant past with Salem have any kind of connection? Has anyone made that kind of case?
No, I wouldn't think so. Is, of course, where the name came up, because the USS Salem was named after the city of Salem, Massachusetts, which is the Witch City. And so the official nickname of the ship is the Sea Witch, which is where the title, The Soul of the Sea Witch, came from.
Okay. And the crew discussed USS Salem has a soul. I thought that was a captivating way.
Yeah, well, the way that came about is one of our first visits down there, we hadn't actually started filming yet. We just went down to, explore the ship and, look for filming locations. And it was my brother, actually, Jim Ashworth, who was with me. And when we were talking to Don about the ship, he was giving us the history. And Jim just brought up this question. He says, do you think that the ship... an inanimate object would have a soul? And so it kind of went from there, and I went to a meeting at used to go to a place called KRI Center, which is, you know, a place where we discuss all kinds of paranormal stuff. And one night I said nothing about why I was asking. I just brought up to the whole room. I said, you know, does anybody, what does everybody think? Could an inanimate object, like I said, I think I said like a ship, could it have a soul? And, you know, just to see what everybody's answer would be. And what we all, you know, basically came up with is, you know, the ship itself would not have a soul. It's, you know, it's made of steel. And but the soul of the ship, I mean, you know, the Salem, in a way, does have a soul, but it's the souls of all the people who were served on the ship, all the people who were touched by the ship, and the energy that was left behind by all these people. Which basically, you know, that's how we all, you know, figured that the ship technically, like I say, technically a ship wouldn't have a soul, but there is the souls of the collective souls of everybody who was touched by the ship. And so that's how I came up with the name Soul of the Sea Witch.
You know, one of the topics that you introduced early on about when she was built, made her, you know, maiden voyage in when, 1949, she has the most high-tech equipment for the time. Does the radios and radar, all the other gadgets on a ship, does that attract paranormal activity here, like, you know, like on some of the TV shows, you know, the camera batteries die. I know when I got out, you know, my camera to take, you know, my first shot at America's Stonehenge, the battery went, you know, just suddenly went dead.
Oh, did it?
So,
yeah. When we were filming our latest thing up there, we had a lot of problems with batteries dying on us. So, yeah, I suppose all the electronics on the ship, although, you know, none of the radios or anything are working these days, or the radar or anything like that, but I suppose, you know, at some point that could have something to do with the hauntings.
I just wonder, it's, you know, the paranormal's not, you know, like, not an expert at it. It's just an interesting subject. When you hear a little bit about some of the other, like, the someone tunes in on the AM dial, and, you know, like, they might hear grandma giving a cookie recipe or something like that. Yeah, you hear things like that every once in a while. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's saying about, like, Dennis's property, that's had to kind of, you know, tell Dennis, hey, slow down. Let me get the battery changed here first before you, lose my place and, you know, forget what I'm shooting right now. But, yeah, there's some of those energy lines and technology seems to figure into some cases. I just wanted to ask.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I certainly don't consider myself an expert on the paranormal by any means, but it is just something that's very interesting and something I don't really understand, but I would like to understand more of it. And I mean, it's projects like this that kind of help in that direction.
I guess people asking.
Go ahead.
I think you get people asking questions and thinking about experiences.
Hmm.
There are also reports of mists floating through the hallways. Is that a rare occurrence, or does it happen pretty regular basis?
I think that would be the mists. Actually, I think would be fairly rare. There have been a lot of people have seen shadow figures. One of our crew during filming, and my brother actually he saw a shadow figure dart across one of the corridors right in front of him. So there are a number of people that have seen them on board the ship. What exactly a shadow figure is, I don't know. I mean, there are some people that say it's a dark entity, but I don't really buy that because I don't believe in demons, so I guess I wouldn't. But
in one of the groups you cite as being really instrumental in this project was the Greater Boston Paranormal Associates.
Right.
What role were they playing in the making of your documentary?
Well, like I said, in the first place, they're the ones that do all the public paranormal investigations on board the ship. They're the ones that run it, and they're the ones that do it for the ship. You know, they don't make any money out of themselves. They do it totally, 100% to raise money for the ship. And so they're the ones that have the access to the ship. And Don DeCristofaro, who is the leader of Greater Boston, is a friend of mine, and he is the one that got me the access to do this film aboard the ship, which I got to say was really fun. I had a 717 foot Navy ship with unrestricted access to play on. So that was fun. And so, I mean, they all, of course, have had their experiences aboard the ship. So a lot of what the film is about is them telling their experiences, like the ghost cook,
right,
and the shadow figure and the other figure in that they saw going down the corridor, and EVPs that they have gotten aboard. So they are a big part of the film, and I really have to thank them for helping me out and making it all possible.
When the time comes when people can be tourists and visit the USS Salem, and hopefully that is going to be really soon, the volunteer staff of the ship, they seem like they're very knowledgeable people. I think a couple of them said that they were also in the Navy as well. So visitors get a background from people who know what they're talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah. And, one of the gentlemen who is in the video actually served aboard the ship back in the 1940s. He was a Marine aboard the ship, and so you know he actually had his own experiences on the ship, and he has seen things just being there these days as one of the volunteers. And I got to say, it's I think it's a great thing, a great job that these people are doing to preserve the ship. And I actually dedicated the film to the volunteers of the Salem Association. And I think it's great the way that they are keeping the ship. It's the only remaining heavy cruiser in existence these days. All the other ones are gone, and the Salem is the only one that's left.
They are preserving history.
Exactly, preserving history. And as we mentioned, the Salem is part of the Navy Shipbuilding Museum. And so there is a part of the ship that has been rebuilt into a museum with exhibits and such. But most of the ship is like walking back into history. Most of the ship is just like it was back in the 40s, the 50s. It's like I say, it's just like walking back into history. Everything is still there, just as it was, just as it was left.
Well, one of the nice aspects of your photography is the use of drones. And I think it would have been a totally different movie with just, a shot inside a certain room or just a shot of, staying at the bow, looking down on the
turrets. Absolutely agree. Yep, I absolutely agree. I think the drone footage is really adds a lot to the film. And for that, I have to give a big thank you to Alexander Petikoff from Petikoff Media. He's the one that did the drone footage for me. And he did a great job. Excellent.
I think so too. Hovering over and flying down the ship, and
it was a totally different perspective of everything.
Yeah, and you can see where all the guns were or the cannons were placed along the sides of the ship. It gives you a sense of its proportion to how it's going to be riding through the waves in the sea. It was really very well done.
Yeah, he did. Like I say, he did a great job. He's really amazing footage he did for me, and I really appreciate him doing it. I didn't have my own drone at the time. I do now, so I could do it myself now. But I thank him for that.
Oh yeah, I think Alexander showed he's a very talented cameraman. With all the work you've done at the James House, did you notice any differences between a haunted house and, you know, basically a haunted floating house for 1800 sailors? Is the paranormal different near water?
Well, they always say that water does help to ramp up the paranormal, which is probably true. It probably has a lot to do with why a lot of ships are haunted. As far as the difference between the house and the ship, I mean a ghost, I don't know how else to put it, but a ghost is a ghost, I guess, whether it be in a house or on a ship. So I didn't really get any big differences as far as that goes.
I was just wondering if, you know, the settings had something different, or there was just a continuity on land and versus sea.
Like I say, they do say that water has a lot to do with it. And, of course, the ship is floating in water. And then a place like the James House, for instance, there is not any rivers or anything right close by, but there are a number of wells right on the property around the house. So there is water involved there, too. You know?
Huh. Interesting. Okay.
Actually hadn't thought about it until now.
Okay, I don't you just sit there and bring out all these interesting details. I just kind of like connecting dots and see if we can find patterns.
Yeah.
I like that. I think it was supposed to be a profiler, but, you know, it's... ended up in radio instead.
Oh, yeah.
But okay, so you and my good buddy Lynn Nickerson did a documentary on America's Stonehenge a few years ago, and you're working on another one. What's going on with this follow-up documentary?
Right now, we did a lot of the film on back in September, I guess it was, and I've been working on editing, but we did have some technical difficulties, so there are a couple of things that we have to go back and refilm. And so we're just right at this point, we got to schedule something with Dennis when we'll be able to go back and film again. This time of year, we won't be able to film outside, so we'll be doing it inside. But that's basically, right now, it's kind of on hold until we can go back and redo a couple of the scenes.
Okay.
That will be coming out, I expect, sometime this winter.
Okay. Is it going to be another YouTube release, or, you know, visible on YouTube?
Yeah, it'll be on YouTube, and it's actually we're doing it as an episode of Edge of Reality TV that we did at a local TV station, Havel Community TV in Havel, Mass. And so it will be shown on local TV stations as well as on YouTube.
Cool. Okay. So we'll be able to see it sometime soon then.
Yeah, sometime this winter, I would guess.
Okay. Good.
I think probably we'll be going back up there. We said after the first of the year, so I guess that has come. So it could be shortly, I guess. We haven't set a date yet, but it probably won't be too much longer before we get back there.
Cool. Okay. Willie, I know you have to get up for work early in the morning, so I don't want to keep you up any later than you have to be. But is there anything you want to conclude tonight's show with? Any websites? There's the USS-Salem.org website that people can visit. Is there do you have any other websites? Anything else you want to plug?
Well, yeah, as far as the Salem itself goes, that is the website, USS-Salem.org. And, of course, you can you go to Facebook and type in USS Salem, and they have a Facebook page, too. So you can get the information about the ship and when it will be open to the public. It should be open sometime, I think probably April, they open for the year. I'm not sure. And if you're interested in paranormal investigations aboard the ship, that would be Greater Boston Paranormal Associates is the ones that takes care of that. They are on Facebook, and they also have a website, which is gbpr.com, I believe. But if you go to Google and just type in Greater Boston Paranormal Associates, or go to Facebook, you'll find it. And you can find out all the information about paranormal tours on there. And I don't know just when they're going to start, but I'm sure it'll be probably spring or late spring. And they do a number of them throughout the season, and it's always a good time. And let's see, the only other thing I would say
to
if you want to see Soul of the Sea Witch, just go to YouTube and just type in Soul of the Sea Witch, and it will come right up. And I hope everybody enjoys it. One of my main things right now for this video is I hope it at least in some way helps to bring some attention to the Salem and to get people down there to visit and hopefully donate money to the ship and help them out. So that's really what I'm looking for at this point is awareness of the ship.
Oh yeah, that's a worthy cause, and your documentary is, very, very enjoyable, insightful, well done movie. It was a lot of fun,
Thank you for that, Mark. I appreciate that.
And I'll just let you get your jammies on, head to bed, and we can kind of wrap up the show. But you and Lynn and I think Dennis will be back sometime soon for another appearance, and I'm looking forward to that. So you're not going too far from us. So.
That would be great, and I want to thank you very much for having me on tonight. It's been fun. Always nice to talk to you.
Yeah, I had a great time. So, Barbara, if you want to get ready to wrap up the show, that's fine. And good night, everyone. We'll see you next week. Take care.